Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Harvard University, whose faculty this week voted overwhelmingly to limit the number of A grades that can be given out to a mere 20% of the students in a class plus 4. This means that a class of 15 students would have no more than 7 A's, a class of 30 could have no more than 10, and a class of 100 could have no more than 24. There are no restrictions on the number of A minuses or other grades to be given. Now, supporters say they opted for this draconian policy after the number of A's at Harvard rose from 20% of all grades in 2005 to 40% of all grades in 2015, and now 60% of all grades in 2025. In fact, in last year's graduating class alone, more than 50 students graduated with perfect GPAs, and they said something had to be done. But why? One of our core principles is that all people are equal, and some are more equal than others. But how can we say that everyone is equal and be proud of our anti-ableism if we also give some people A's and other people lesser grades? Who do you think invented the participation trophy? The self-graded paper? The accommodation being had at taking tests? Social-emotional learning? Equity audits? And who do you think tore down that racist, judgmental, merit-based academic atrocity, the SAT? We did! And throughout it all, including all the ways we've tried to smuggle affirmative action back into higher education, Harvard has been right there with us until now. Because we know that Harvard is essentially one of the top 10 theological seminaries for the Holy Church of Wokeness, Reformed, relentlessly producing a consistent cadre of woke-alites year after year who go on to influence culture and law, politics, education, business, and media, we are tempted to trust their judgment on something like this. But, as broad-minded egalitarians who are fully opposed to the idea of individual merit and ranking people according to their personal effort, we must oppose the crimson. So shame on you, Harvard, for being so mean and saying that 80% of students will not have to settle for only receiving an A-minus or, gasp, a B, when in their own minds they identify as A students. For shame, we hereby grade you veritas minus. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, our outstanding award of distinction goes to the Congressional Black Caucus and NAACP President Derek Johnson for fighting back against the Supreme Court and a host of southern states who have clearly started down the path of disenfranchising black voters through what they falsely call race-neutral congressional redistricting.
We are calling on athletes who are coming out of high school not to attend any state-funded school of states that have moved to minimize our right to vote?
Absolutely. Hit them where it hurts. If states want to abandon insanely drawn congressional maps whose sole purpose is to artificially enhance the chances that black Democrat voters will be able to elect black Democrat representatives, then the state universities operated by those states must suffer the consequences.
No representation, no revenue, no one black should be on a playing field of institutions that's living off of our labor. And yet, in states that are seeking to reinstitute a sharecropping reality.
Indeed. Even though black athletes frequently make boatloads of money through name, image, likeness deals in those schools, and of course often go on to make even larger boatloads of money in the NFL and the NBA, calling it sharecropping is a deft reframe. What does the 89th law of wokeness say? When reality's not on your side, deny reality and say the false thing as if it's true. So making it seem like sharecropping is the correct analogy is a perfect illustration of using loaded language to confuse the point. And an emphatic after the statement never hurts your cause.
But the 55% of us who live in the former Confederate South, we will not tolerate a Confederate mentality on our labor, on our ability to contribute, and our ability to be to have representation.
Yes, by all means remind people that even though it was only a short 160 years ago that the Civil War reunited the country and that there hasn't been a Confederacy since, nevertheless, whenever anyone in a southern state who even hints at something we dislike, throw around that term Confederacy as fast as you possibly can. Johnson's only mistake here, and I say this as a friendly amendment after the fact, is that he didn't make any references to Jim Crow, good old boys, poll taxes, lynchings, or the Ku Klux Klan. That was a tactical error on his part. But with so much other good work being done, we'll let it slide. However, if there was one piece of real criticism for President Johnson, it's that he isn't going far enough. It's a good start to call on black athletes to boycott SEC states, but why stop there? Do only athletes matter? What about all black students? Why attend schools in states that are racist? What about black teachers? Why teach at schools in states that are racist? Why only schools? Shouldn't the NAACP be asking all people to not just boycott these states, but to actively flee and leave for places like California and Illinois and New England, where they're completely willing to pander to blacks with custom-drawn congressional districts? I mean, logically, if all African Americans simply fled the southern states entirely, in the next census, those states would lose a massive chunk of political power, which would transfer to the new, more densely black states, who would then pick up representatives and power. But even at that, why only blacks? Should white athletes not be called upon to be anti-racist allies? White students? White teachers? White visitors and residents? The only real flaw in Johnson's demand is that he didn't ask for enough. If all the blacks and all the anti-racist whites fled Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, Missouri, Louisiana, South Carolina, and Texas, we could probably cut their congressional influence by two-thirds or more. And we would know for sure where all the racists live because anyone who stays would self-identify as one. Yes, a mass migration out of southern states is a fantastic solution. And then, well, we could just expel them from the union entirely. Why not? Would we really want states that densely populated by racist whites to stay in the country? We could send them on their merry cross-burning bedsheet-wearing way. They could just form their own little association or community or, I don't know, confederacy of states. Yes, give them what they always wanted. An emaciated, racist, all-white confederacy that is isolated from the real America and won't compete in sports, academics, or economics either. They can keep their sandy beaches and temperate climate. It counts for nothing in comparison with the self-righteous glow of anti-racist pride. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, our shimmering little black dress of justice with 43 fantabulous flapper fringe tassels goes to writer, actor, and comedian Quinta Brunson, the creator and star of Abbott Elementary, for announcing that she will be the voice of Betty Boop in an upcoming project on the history of the development of the famous cartoon Bombshell. As you all know, Betty Boop is a voluptuous, coquettish 1920s flapper in short skirts who shakes her hips, pouts her lips, and periodically utters a catchphrase.
Boop, boop, father.
Now, according to documents at the time, cartoonist Max Fleischer based the character on real-life white singer Helen Kane, who was so unhappy about the similarities in look and sound that she actually sued Fleischer Studios for today's $6 million for using her traits without consent or compensation. Now, if you see Betty and Helen side by side, the likeness is indisputable. But that's what makes this story so wonderful. Because, as you all know, Quinta Brunson is African-American, thus a black woman is voicing a white cartoon character, which means she's actively engaging in, yes, triple backflip reverse cultural disappropriation, stealing cultural power by decentering whiteness. Quinta Brunson is absolutely following our playbook on dismantling the white straight patriarchy, or what we will start referring to as WISP culture, by swapping minority race, gender, and sexual orientation for, in this case, a white icon. Brunson's just following in the footsteps of so many other examples, from making Spider-Man be black, or female, or gay, or all three, to having a female black surfer, a gay or black Captain America, having Samuel L. Jackson portray the white Nick Fury, or Halle Berry as the black Little Mermaid, or Katie Sackhoff portray Battlestar Galactica as Starbuck, or even making James Bond's male boss M a female, or 007 theirselves black or female, or maybe even bisexual. And just look at what Christopher Nolan is doing for The Odyssey in casting Lupita Nyong'o as Helen of Troy and the waif-like transgender Elliot Page as Achilles. Outstanding. We must deliberately, even aggressively, capture key WISP icons in a concentrated effort to dismantle the solidifying totems of the white supremacy cultural fabric. But this is even better than all that. If it were only transracializing Betty Boop with a black voice, that would be one thing. But there's already a move afoot to redefine the character entirely by claiming Betty Boop was actually based off of, yes, black performer Baby Esther Jones. This is full-blown Tier 4 gaslighting, and we love it. Not just transforming a white icon into a black one, but actually claiming she was black all along, meaning that Betty Boop represented stolen flapper valor. The fact that this counter-narrative is not true only makes the gaslight all the more delicious. So well done, Quinta. Instead of public enemies who stole the soul, you showed us who swiped the sway. The only question that remains is whether Betty Boop herself will be redrawn as the sultry black queen she should have always been, and then whether she'll be swapping out her famous black skirt for a white one, since otherwise she'll definitely be difficult to draw. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.